Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
You're listening to the smartest man in talk radio.
You're going to be listening to one of the smartest people that you probably, and you know who this guy is. It's me.
He's Jim Blasingame.
I am smart. I am smart. S-M-R-T. I mean, S-M-A-R-T.
The Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for hanging around with me. Thanks for staying with me. Thanks for being part of my day. Thanks for all you do for all of us small business owners. I don't know what we'd do without you. I know one thing. You're my heroes, And I know Matthew Cartwright agrees with me. Matthew is a partner in the attorney, in the law firm of Munley and Cartwright in the great state of Pennsylvania. He is the one of the resident attorneys in our brain trust, a distinction which I know he tells people about all the time. And Matthew's been with us a number of times before to talk to us about the legal aspect of being a small business owner. And he's our good friend. Matthew, welcome back to the show.
Well, thanks for having me back. It's chilly up here in Pennsylvania this morning.
Yeah? How cold?
20 degrees.
Yeah, that's pretty cold.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, Matthew, one of the things that you've been doing for the last several visits, you've been helping us with some of the classic elements of contracts, helping us understand some of the different components of a contract and what we should look out for, what is acceptable, what's not acceptable, what are some of the red flags, what are things that we might not like but we have to live with, and what can we change, what can we not change, especially even when we're dealing with big companies who lay a big fancy contract on us. And you know, you've talked to us about a number of things that we should be able to expect to maybe make a few adjustments in, and we really appreciate that. I know you've got another element of contract and responsibility that you want to talk to us about.
Well, you're right, Jim. We've done a bunch of good shows about when you're faced with looking at a contract, and maybe it's a relatively minor transaction. You haven't hired a lawyer. You're a small business person, and you don't run and hire a lawyer for every little thing. You're looking at the contract, and gosh, we've done four or five shows talking about particular clauses you're likely mm-hmm. to see, and those are still all there on your computer database for people to listen to. But today, I thought we'd talk about joint and several liability,
mm-hmm.
which is a subject that comes up at cocktail parties now and again.
Exactly, and it's one of the reasons, you know, this kind of conversation is one of the reasons why attorneys don't have groupies, too, by the way, ladies and gentlemen. Matthew, jointly and severally, tell us what that means.
All right, let me tell you how it works. The best way to explain it is to use an example. You're a small business owner. You're 45 years old. You have a couple of kids. You're saving to send them to college. You have a nice home that you built, big mortgage on it. You're paying mortgage on time. You close up shop for the night. You're going to go home. You jump in your car. On the way home, you're in traffic on a busy expressway. You notice a car ahead of you. It's weaving. It's going back and forth in traffic. It's a drunk driver. And sure enough, to your horror, this drunk loses control. He hits the guardrail. He comes back into your path. And you have to slam on your brakes. The good news is you just barely avoid hitting the drunk. But the bad news is the tractor trailer right behind you isn't able to avoid you. Slams into the back of your car. And your car is crushed. You suffer injuries. You suffer a brain injury, for example. So you have short-term memory deficits for the rest of your life. We see these cases.
Mm-hmm.
Fast forward. This case goes to trial. Now, we know we have two responsible defendants, the drunk and the tractor-trailer company behind you. The jury makes a decision. They decide the accident is 80% the fault of the drunk and 20% the fault of the tractor-trailer driver who rear-ended you.
Mm-hmm.
The jury awards $2 million, representing what they think will be the amount of money you would have made the rest of your life, but now you can't make it because you can't even remember what people just said to you.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is the drunk doesn't have any money. That's why he was drinking. He was out driving with an insurance policy of say $50,000. A lot of people have
nothing.
The tractor trailer company has liability insurance. It's federally mandated that they have $1 million, and this one has an excess policy of $10 million.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so this is where joint and several liability comes in. Under the principle of joint and several liability. This is an old doctrine that came over from England, one of the rights we fought for in our American Revolution.
Mm-hmm.
It works like this. Because of the joint
negligence. Hold on to that thought, Matthew. We're going to that'll be the little teaser we'll have when we come back after these messages, ladies and gentlemen. Matthew will tell us who has to pay, what portion does each one have to pay, and then we're going to talk about how this impacts your small business when you do business in the marketplace. It's 20 till. Matthew Cartwright is our guest. I'm Jim Blasingame. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Check it out. Use it to your advantage. It's all there for you, just for you, so you can have the maximum opportunity to be successful. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter also while you're there. It comes every Sunday afternoon by email, and check out our blog while you're there. Matthew Cartwright is our guest and our good friend. He's attorney with Munley and Cartwright out of Scranton, Pennsylvania, and actually all over that part of the world. You're licensed in Pennsylvania and New York, I think, aren't you?
Pennsylvania, New York, and we actually do cases all up and down the East Coast.
Jeff. Yeah, yeah. Okay, you had the story, folks. The scenario is that the drunk driver caused you to have to stop your car to hit your brakes to avoid the drunk driver. The truck plowed into you, causing injury and damages. The court awarded $2 million to you, and the drunk has nothing. The truck company has quite a bit, and so where does joint and several liability come into play now?
Okay, here's how it works. Under the principle of joint and several liability, because the joint negligence of both defendants combined to produce the harm to you, each defendant is liable for the whole result. So in this situation, yes, you can collect the entire verdict from the trucking company's insurance company, and the trucking company can get back the $50,000 from the drunk's insurance after they
right.
pay you. But, people say, well, how is that fair to the trucking company? They're paying the whole shot, less $50,000 away because he's judgment proof. Well, the principle is this. The drunk can't pay his judgment. Who's going to bear the burden of that? That's what this is all about.
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to bear the burden of the drunk being financially irresponsible? Either you and your family, who are the innocent victims, or this trucking company, who, if they hadn't been negligent in the first place, the harm never would have occurred. So, you know, back in England many, many years ago, they decided, well, you know, it's reasonable to say that the trucking company in this situation pays the whole shot. But a lot of people, they don't, you know, when you analyze this question and you're at a cocktail party talking about it, it's a classic example of whose ox is being gored.
Right.
Who do you see yourself more likely as, the victim or a defendant in the case?
Well, right. The example that when I think of joint and severally for small business owners, what I think about are the two partners that come together to start a business. One of them has that nice home you were talking about. It's actually paid for. One of them has a pretty good bit of income. Has done pretty well. Maybe he's a little bit older, and the other partner is younger. Still has a long way to go in their career, and so they both go out on a limb for some pretty significant commitments. Either they're committed from a liability standpoint, if they should happen to own that truck that ran into somebody, or if they borrow $1 million from the bank or whatever, then Matthew, talk to us about joint and several liability.
Well, that's right. I mean, in any business venture you go in, I mean, I don't care if it's a partnership or whether you're just co-signing a loan for somebody. You have to take into account the risk of your losing everything. And really, what you want to do is you want to build into that deal that you're being rewarded commensurate with the risk. So if you have a paid up $1 million home and lots of money in the bank, and your partner doesn't have anything and really stands to lose nothing, your reward should be that much greater than your partner's. And your partner probably will understand that and accept it. You need to.
But most people, Matthew, most people don't go into it realizing, understanding. And that's the reason why what you're talking about is so important. Most people don't understand this. The joint and several liability is not in the forefront of their mind, and they're thinking, okay, 50-50. Yeah, we're 50-50 partners. That makes a lot of sense. But the truth is, if it all goes south, it's not 50-50. It's going to be on the one with the deep pockets. That's the other term, isn't it, Matthew, that came over from England, I guess, the deep pockets theory.
Well, that's it. And that's what you hear at the cocktail parties is, well, this is just another way for them to get at the deep pockets. But a couple things there. Number one, deep pockets are not involved in a tort case, the example that I use. If the trucking company didn't have some fault in causing the harm, just because their deep pockets would not have brought them into the case. The second thing is, joint and several liability has been abolished in a lot of states.
Really?
About two-thirds of American states have enacted legislation to ameliorate the harsh effects on, well, these trucking companies and every other deep pockets defendant. Because it really kind of sticks in the craw of a lot of Americans when they think about it, somebody paying more than their fair share.
But that's for liability cases, not for contractual cases,
that's
though, right?
Right. You're exactly right. I'm glad you mentioned that. It's only for liability cases, not contractual cases.
Mm-hmm.
But you see all sorts of, we'd be on the phone for another hour and a half going through all the different ways that statutes have changed the rule of joint and several liability. For example, some of them say, well, if a defendant is only 40% at fault or less, then they just have to pay their proportionate share.
Right. But only in those liability cases. When we come back, I'm going to ask Matthew, in contract cases, if joint and several is the default condition. And if it is, you really need to know about that. 10 till. Stay with us. We'll be right back with Matthew Cartwright. I'm Jim Blasingame. Welcome back. It's 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're having a great visit with our good friend Matthew Cartwright, attorney partner with Monday and Cartwright, a law firm in the great state of Pennsylvania. And Matthew, give us your website, please.
Oh, sure. It's Munley, www.munley, MUNLEY.com.
And folks, this is not your grandfather's attorney's website, so check it out when you get a chance. We're talking about joint and several liability, ladies and gentlemen, and basically what it means is that when there's more than one party involved in a case, in an issue, in a claim or a contract, the both parties are responsible for their part or maybe as much as all of it. Would that be a good simple way to say it, Matthew?
That's right. I mean, if your conduct combines with the conduct of somebody else to do harm or to breach a contract, then you can be on the hook for the full amount. Now, we talked a lot about, so far we talked about where, oh, there's an accident and there's insurance, but the problem is a lot of things that you do as a small business person cannot be covered by insurance.
Right.
Breaches of contract are not covered by insurance.
Some kind of negligence in the course of the business that doesn't hurt anybody but causes another person to lose. A shipment isn't delivered in time or instructions are given out wrong. But here's my first question to you, though, Matthew, about this. Mm-hmm. Is Is joint and several liability the default position in contracts?
Yes, it is.
It's assumed. I mean, even if it doesn't say jointly and severally, isn't it understood that that's the case?
I don't care what state you're in. If your signature is on a contract promising something, and that promise doesn't come true, no matter how many other signatures are on there, you can be liable for the full amount.
So don't go looking for the joint and several language, folks, and if you don't see it, think you're covered.
Right.
You know, that you're okay because you're not.
That's exactly right.
How do we limit our exposure? How do we fix that?
Well, the first thing to do, as I mentioned, is to recognize that if you're the heavy in the deal, if you're the guy or gal that has most of the money to lose, take that into account in how you get paid at the end of the deal. It doesn't make sense for you to put up a whole lot more money than your partner and then split the profits right down the middle.
But that's your deal with your partner. How do you let the world know that you're only 50% or 10% responsible for the liability of this company? Is that possible?
I haven't seen that. I suppose you could do it, but for example, the classic example of this is co-signing a loan. The bank's not going to want to give you the loan. The only reason they want your co-signature on there is they know you've got the money to pay if the other fellow defaults.
Right.
So if you say, well, can we agree that I only have to pay 50% of this if we default on our payments, bank's not going to give you the loan on that term.
Mm-hmm.
So... And that's contracts. As far as dealing with strangers, you know, the people that you don't have a contract with, but because you're a co-owner of the business, and suppose your partner does something goofy, like intentionally harms somebody else through the business, absolutely. Even in states where they've abolished joint and several liability, they have kept out intentional conduct as an exception to that, so it still applies.
One thing you can do if you're an investor is make sure that your money is put in the proper way, so it doesn't so you aren't held out as any kind of a decision maker, and you're not part of the organization, so to speak. Is that right?
That's exactly right. And what you're talking about there are limited partnerships.
Right.
And that's one thing you should consider if you're going into a deal with somebody that you know has unequal assets to you. Think about only dealing as a limited partner. You can also set up your own corporation and deal through the corporation.
And just be a shareholder and nothing else.
That's right.
Not an officer of the corporation or an employee.
Well, remember, I mean, when you buy shares of a company on the New York Stock Exchange, the worst you can do is lose the money you put into the share. They can't come after you personally for liability of the company.
Jointly and severally, ladies and gentlemen, is something you need to know about if you're going to work in the marketplace. Matthew, thank you for being here. Thank you for giving us all this great information.
It's always a pleasure talking with you, Jim.
Matthew Cartwright, ladies and gentlemen, a partner with Munley, and Cartwright. And that's Munley.com. Matthew will be back, I promise. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blassingame reminding you to always seek excellence, not perfection.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.